How's Kevin Stewart again?
23.
Love is a burning thing.
Welcome everyone to another new podcast show from the Anfield Talk. This time it's the Premier League preview show, and we're focusing on Liverpool's game against West Ham on the weekend, and we'll have a little chat about the other Premier League games also happening this weekend between Saturday and Sunday, six games Saturday and four on the Sunday. We're also going to have a chat about Liverpool news from the week, and we're also going to have a little natter about Fantasy Premier League as well. But we're going to start with the reason that we're basically here today, and that's to preview Liverpool's game for the upcoming weekend against West Ham United. The game is to be played on Sunday, and it's the last game of the weekend, being played at 4:30 in UK time, and West Ham have been quite a bogey team at Liverpool as of late. Liverpool's only won one of the last six games against the Hammers. But Ross, do you want to start us off with your general opinions before we get a bit more in-depth?
Yeah, well, firstly, West Ham, they've been awful recently, haven't they? Like, that 5-1 against Arsenal kind of just highlighted their defensive weaknesses, and you can say that Arsenal are a top team attacking-wise, and they are, but to concede in five, it does not look top quality for a team that's just moved to the Olympic Stadium thinking they're about to be getting Champions League football. But, yeah, I think we should have a fairly easy time. Well, I mean, it's a good time for us to be able to bounce back from the disappointing game we had on the weekend, and hopefully we don't slip up this time.
I think two slip-ups in a row would be devastating to fans, especially seeing as we've been so good at home so far this season. Also, on the podcast, again, as per usual, as he always is, he's been here ever since the beginning, Arjun, what is your opinion on the West Ham game?
Thank you, Anthony. I'm a little concerned because, first of all, yeah, we've lost the game against Bournemouth, and then we lost West Ham both times last season. We lost 2-0 and 3-0 despite dominating possession nearly 65% on both occasions. They matched us in every other department, and James Collins always turns into like Mats Hummels when he plays us. I don't know why. He's absolutely brilliant, and I think that against Liverpool especially, they call him the Ginger Pele. I think it suits him perfectly. They're a different team now, slightly less effective defensively, and they're fighting relegation, or at least I think they are. They're maybe 18th or something.
Yeah, they're down there.
They're 17th, yeah. But I wouldn't underestimate the confidence they have. That is, the confidence of beating us and the confidence that Dimitri Payet just needs one set piece to turn the game on its head. So, I'm a little concerned, especially considering the loss last week. A second loss would send Liverpool fan base into, I don't know, into a tailspin for sure. And I'm just glad we're playing at home.
Yeah, I think two losses in a row would devastate everybody and send everybody, particularly on Twitter, into some crazed frenzy, probably calling for Klopp's head, calling for Karius to be lynched and hung. But I'm worried too. I think West Ham, I think when we play West Ham, form goes out the window. It doesn't matter what kind of form both teams are in, West Ham always seem to play well against us, particularly as of late. You mentioned the two games against us last season. We also played them in the FA Cup, which we drew in the first round, and then they beat us at the bowling ground, Upton Park, in the return game. But Liverpool have struggled against, as you say, James Collins and Winston Reid and Angelo Ogbonna in the West Ham defence, and Adrian. Obviously, Adrian's not really starting for West Ham anymore. They've got Darren Randolph in goal, and he's been, well, I would say that he's been performing well, but then he did concede five goals last weekend, which isn't exactly the best thing for a goalkeeper to be doing, even if Karius did concede four. We're not going to talk about that anyway. But West Ham have only scored 15 goals so far this season, and the stats per game, goals per game, would lead it to be a 3-1 win to Liverpool, because we've got 35 goals, it's either 35 or 34 in the Premier League this season, And Liverpool have actually conceded 11 less goals than West Ham as well. Liverpool conceding 18, 14 of which away from Anfield, only 4 at Anfield, and also 9 of those without Joel Matip in the 3 games that we've missed him. West Ham have conceded 29 goals, including the 5 that Arsenal put past them last week. Ross, what do you think that West Ham will bring to the game attacking-wise? Do you think that they'll be able to score past our defence, especially with Joel Matip coming back?
I'm going to say no, but I know that me saying no means they're going to score. But statistically, like you said, they aren't doing the greatest. And if you look past the goals and look to the goal, like the shots on target, they're actually, at the moment, they've got the third lowest number of shots on target per game. It's 2.79 for them per game, which is a total of 39. And like you said, they scored. How many have they scored so far?
15 over.
Yeah. So they've scored 15 of their 39 shots on target, which kind of isn't the best reading to be having. Whereas we're up there with the highest number in the Premier League on 98 shots on target, which is 7 per game, which is fairly good, I would say. But yeah, they've got the likes of Payet, and I think he's the kind of player that can turn up whenever, and they seem to rate him as one of the best players in the Premier League. The West Ham.
Yeah, I disagree with that massively.
Yeah, he's not really good at all.
I think Payet's more of a streaky player, that you'll have like 3 or 4 games that he's playing really well, and then you'll have 3 or 4 games that he's playing really, really badly, like Mane was for Southampton.
It's true, but you can't deny that he has got some talent, and he's shown that in recent seasons. But I feel we shouldn't be fearing them too much, but shouldn't get overconfident, like Klopp has said in recent press conferences.
I think Klopp just wants to keep everyone grounded, really, rather than people getting built up saying, "Oh, we're going to win the league." But yeah. If I asked you at the start of the season, where would you like Liverpool to finish? Would you have said top four, or would you have said, "I want to win the league"?
Top four, definitely.
Exactly. So yeah. People are just making it too big a deal of it, because realistically, Liverpool have finished like 7th and 8th in the past 2 seasons. We're not expecting to win the league, really, are we?
Exactly.
We're just looking for progress, and progress that we can build upon. Like, yeah. I would take winning the League Cup, going far in the FA Cup, and finishing top four this season, and I would be very, very happy.
Yeah, I'd take that any day of the week, because Klopp has already shown how much progress he's going to make with us, and it's so early days, and he's focusing a lot on the future. So.
Well, exactly. We're already in the semi-finals of the EFL Cup, soon to be Carabao Cup. I thought they weren't selling the advertising rights to the cups, but obviously the FA lied. But I'll go back to your thing on Dimitri Payet, and he's only scored 1 goal this season. He's only got 1 goal, but he has got 5 assists to go along with it. He's played 996 minutes for West Ham in 11 appearances and 1 off the bench. Adam Lallana, on the other hand, has got 3 goals, 5 assists in 794 minutes.
Obviously, he's miles ahead. Wouldn't have said that last season, but, you know.
No, exactly. So Payet was out of this world last season at times.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the Payet goal this season was probably the goal of the season, yeah?
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was, but I'm going to agree.
Yeah.
He dribbled from the halfway line and passed everyone and then slotted it into the bottom corner.
Yeah, it was a particularly good goal. Payet has actually not been offside once so far this season. So
how do you get these stats?
I'm going for my job at Opta. I've told you this. I know this is one thing that's come from Adam, who has unfortunately left us. But
Unfortunately.
But I get these stats, okay? You don't need to know how. I just get these stats, and you can just trust me that they're true.
I trust you, but it's just a weird one to come up with.
Well, yeah, it's just that we're not going to catch him offside, and we need to have our defenders vigilant to see where he is, that's all.
Okay, I see.
Yeah, and Payet's got 80.5% pass accuracy compared to Lallana's 86.3% pass accuracy. But Payet does make 3.9 key passes per game, whereas Adam Lallana only makes 1.1 key passes. And there's arguments to have both in your side, but I'm not sure which the neutrals would go for. I know that we've all picked Lallana, but you would pick Lallana I'm not even going to give you an opinion. You'd pick Lallana.
Obviously.
Over Payet any day of the week, especially with Lallana's form that he's been in this season, even though he has been injured a couple of times. But that doesn't matter. I think the Payet is probably West Ham's danger man, unless Mikel Antonio comes back. Because Antonio scored 7 goals for West Ham already this season, and he's probably been their best player. He was injured in the game against Arsenal, didn't play. Arjun, where do you see West Ham's attack coming from?
Big Andy. I mean, the West Ham love to cross the ball. And this season, I don't see the point of it because they haven't had a centre forward. But he got back to full fitness last week against Arsenal. He played about 15-20 minutes. He scares me. Any old player that's big and physical, Benteke, maybe Lambert, Balotelli, Andy Carroll, these guys just scare me because our defense is still very suspect, according to me. It's just that we haven't faced that many good attacking teams this season. So I think Carroll is a huge threat if he starts the game, especially with Payet coming in from the left, crossing. We know his crosses are brilliant. His set pieces are amazing. And yeah, that actually is their biggest strength, the set pieces. Ogbonna, Winston Reid, Andy Carroll, all these guys, they can score at any point of time. We only have maybe three big guys to match up with them. That's Matip, Lovren, and Emre Can. So hopefully we can, but I highly doubt it.
I completely agree. I think Big Andy's going to be devastating in the box if he does get that chance. Especially with set pieces that we're notoriously bad for defending. I think it's 7 of our goals that we've conceded so far this season have come as a result of set pieces, and that's not even against teams who are great at set pieces, you know. I think it was Hull that scored from a corner, and that's just bloody ridiculous. Now, West Ham have been on a sort of dip. I'll call it a dip of form recently. Losing to Arsenal 5-1 at the Olympic Stadium last week. Do you think that the Olympic Stadium is part of the problem going on at West Ham, Ross? Or do you think it's more of an overarching problem with the team?
I think it must be a mixture of both of them. Because, I don't know, their old stadium, and I'm kicking myself now because I cannot remember what it was called.
Upton Park, man.
Yeah, that's the one. Upton Park, the fans had a connection with it, obviously, and it was... reasonably, I can't say it's a big stadium because it's not massive, but like iconic stadium. I'm going to get killed for saying that, but you know. And I think that's a massive thing in football. It can't be underestimated because you've seen it with Tottenham when they've been playing their Champions League games at Wembley recently. They've not been in the greatest form, and obviously they're in the Europa League now. And West Ham, they seem to have been struggling the same way. But then again, you could say their away form. I don't have any stats on it, but surely, if it was just the Olympic Stadium that was to blame, they'd still be picking up a reasonable amount of points away from home. And I don't think they have been. So, I do agree that the Olympic Stadium has been quite a big impact on it, but the players also haven't really been performing to the standards of last season, and I think it should be something they begin to worry about.
I think that the Olympic Stadium brings a whole new amount of pressure on the West Ham players to perform. Because the way that it affects them mentally, you've got all these more, this vast increase of capacity. You've got so many more fans shouting at you. Say you've gone from, say, 25,000 seater stadium, and you do something wrong, you've got 20,000 people shouting at you, you're shit. And then you move to a bigger stadium, and you've suddenly got 55,000 people shouting at you that you're shit. That's going to take a toll on you mentally, because it's so much louder, and it's so much of a more overreaching opinion, and you're like, I guess I am. I'm just going to stop trying, and I may as well just go into a hole and be West Ham this season. Because the Olympic Stadium, as magnificent as it is, I don't really think it's built for football anyway. But if you watch the West Ham game at the Olympic Stadium, you can see the gap between the pitch and the seats. It's just monumental. And I don't think that's right of a football game. It takes away from the atmosphere massively. And that's another thing that Upton Park Bowling Ground did do, is create a wonderful atmosphere from West Ham fans and away fans as well. It was so compact, and even though it was relatively small compared to other stadiums, it was one of the loudest stadiums in the Premier League. And I'm just looking at West Ham's games now. I don't think they have won a game away from home so far this season. Oh, no, they beat Crystal Palace. And that's it. they beat Crystal Palace and they've lost against Manchester United away from home. They've lost against Everton away from home. They've lost against Tottenham away from home. They lost against Arsenal at home. Well, West Ham have just been shocking. They lost against Chelsea away from home as well. The way that West Ham are going, they're going to end up in this relegation battle, and I don't think that that's going to be fair to the fans who have stuck by them through thick and thin, being up and down in the Premier League in the Championship when they were, like I said, when they were up and down between 2000 and 2007, and obviously got to the FA Cup final in 2006, which we played them in and we managed to come out on top. I'm going to change gear a bit here. Arjun, do you see West Ham's defence coping with our attack? Especially with the amount of injuries that they have, they had to make 8 changes, I think it was, against Arsenal.
Yeah, irrespective of the team that they put out, West Ham have this really good tactic that they use. I like to call it tactical fouling. It's something that Tottenham do. Tottenham also do it really well. West Ham have the most yellow cards. And I'll tell you why this is a good tactic. Against teams like us, you just want to stop the opposition playing in transition. So as soon as they get the ball, you want to foul them early so that you don't have to. That's what West Ham do extremely well. They just bring whoever's breaking and they just tackle them and commit a foul. And a lot of times that leads to a yellow card, but they have been lucky to not get many of their yellow cards. So this could actually be a detriment to us in terms of breaking our rhythm, breaking our fluidity. And, you know, we do have a lot of injury issues, at least small injuries. So this could also lead to furthering those little knocks. However, like I said, they've picked up the most yellow cards for any team in the Premier League this season. So it could also be beneficial in terms of they could get a couple of players sent off. They have a history of players getting sent off at Anfield against Liverpool. Most recently, Mark Noble got sent off last season, even though they won 3-0. But so I think defensively, they are good enough to draw against Liverpool. It's just a question of, can we get that one goal and can we not concede a single goal?
I think we definitely do need that one goal. The earlier that we get that goal, the better. You've seen not only this season, but in seasons gone past, when we've scored an early goal, we can go on to win 4-5-0 against anybody. We did it against Tottenham on White Hart Lane. We did it against Arsenal at Anfield. It doesn't really matter who we're against. I really think whenever anybody plays Liverpool, really, form goes out the window and it's just what happens on the day what happens. Because you've seen what Bournemouth did to us. You've seen what we've done to Leicester and Hull as well. I know Leicester haven't been exactly themselves this season. Well, I say that it's probably they weren't themselves last season when they won the Premier League, for God's sake. Arjun, you brought up the 3-0 victory that West Ham had over us last season at Anfield, which also involved Felipe Coutinho, of all people, getting sent off. Ross, do you think that we could see a repeat of that result maybe, or do you think that's out of the question here?
No way. I don't see us not scoring at all, especially at home, because we've been in such incredible form at home this season so far. So, no, there's just no chance it's going to be that bad. And I am going to be mocked completely when it does happen.
That you are, not just by everybody who's listening, but to all of us as well. We're all going to roast you when that happens.
I'm actually more terrified of West Ham Central than anybody else because of
this game. Oh, West Ham Central. When we went to the FBAs, we met West Ham Fan TV and they were really sound, actually. We had a conversation with them about Payet and Coutinho, and even they agreed that Coutinho was better than Payet, and that surprised me coming from genuine West Ham fans. Obviously, Coutinho's injured and we don't have his attacking influence with his 5 goals and 5 assists already this season. But I don't think that we're necessarily going to be missing that, because we're probably probably going to be starting with Mane, Firmino and Divock Origi up front. Mane shaking off a little niggle that he's had, that he suffered against the Bournemouth game when Jurgen Klopp made his one change, his one substitution against Bournemouth when he brought Adam Lallana on for Sadio Mane. And it was forced. That just goes to show that Jurgen Klopp has faith in his starting 11s. But yeah, as I said, we're going to start, probably going to be starting with Origi, Firmino and Mane. Arjun, do you see one area in particular that these three can get past the West Ham defence? Do you see a weakness? Do you see an area that they can exploit?
The wing backs, actually. So West Ham play with a three at the back and Noble sitting in front of them. So there's a lot of space, especially for the likes of Mane and Origi, who have that extra yard of pace in them. So they can get behind the defense. I would prefer seeing Firmino play central and Origi more wide, because like we saw last game, Firmino is completely ineffective on the left wing, and Origi himself has stated that he likes to cut in from the left and bring it onto his stronger right foot.
So you saw that with the goal that he scored the other week.
Exactly. And he scored something similar against Stoke, I think, last season as well.
Yeah, I think he was Stoke.
And he has been working with the greatest, Thierry Henry, with the Belgium national team, who also loved to move out to the left, cut in and shoot. So this, I think that would be our best formation, given the best combination, given our current set of players. That could also beat West Ham. I'm a little skeptical about our defending. I mentioned that before. And even if they play Payet, Lanzini and Fletcher, as opposed to Payet, Lanzini and Carroll, they still have the pace to get behind our defense. We also play a really, really high line. So I'm okay with conceding a goal or two, but I just need us to score more. I'm not bothered about clean sheets anymore.
I don't think anyone's bothered with clean sheets, to be honest. Well, all the people calling for Karius's head and Mignolet to come back are caring about clean sheets, obviously, even though he did obviously concede four against Bournemouth. But I think we're just going to forget about that game and never talk about it again, just like the Burnley game, right? Just out of our memory, and it can just go, and we're just focusing, and we're unbeaten this season.
When did we play Burnley?
We've already played Burnley.
Did we? Nah, I don't remember it.
Neither do I.
It's already happening. This is peak. It's brilliant, right? I'm going to move on slightly again. Going to move away from the defence again, Arjun. I'm going to move back to our attack. And more the up of the attack. Arjun, I'm going to direct another question to you. You wrote an article this week on the website. What was it called? I think it was called Diamond in the Rough, am I right? Would you trial that diamond formation against West Ham?
Absolutely. So I think our best 11 is no recognized striker, with Firmino playing the false nine and Coutinho on the left wing. Now, Coutinho is not there, so we just put in Lallana and move it into a diamond. That would work beautifully because the fluidity stays. We play Lallana in his preferred number 10 role. We have Firmino and Mane up front. We know they like to stay up front. And it restricts players to certain sections, certain zones while defending. And it helps our press. It helps our pressing game beautifully. It's easy to isolate particular players with the diamond, and it keeps the pitch narrow. So it allows us to really, really defend as a compact unit, as opposed to the expansive unit that we defend as right now.
Yeah, I agree, particularly with the way Milner and Klein attack. I'd say that the way that they get forward so much is, it can be difficult for players to come back so quickly. And going back to previously, before you mentioned their wing backs being the area that we can exploit, and I completely agree, because West Ham have struggled to defend against people playing through balls in behind their defence so far this season. And with Divock Origi, and particularly Sadio Mane's blistering pace, you could see them just running past their defence and getting in behind, because West Ham's defence isn't exactly the quickest of defences. Say that they're playing Reed, Ogbonna, Cresswell, there's not exactly the quickest of players there, and I'm sure Mane could beat them all in a foot race to reach a ball. That does depend whether or not Darren Randolph comes out and tries to claim the ball himself, and we've seen players, goalkeepers try to do that against Sadio Mane in the past, particularly Michel Vorm, who did it exceptionally well, and then Kasper Schmeichel, who didn't do it as good. Ross, do you see the same weakness in the West Ham defence, or do you see another weakness that Liverpool can exploit, maybe further down the middle rather than through the wings?
Yeah, well, I kind of just see the whole defence as being a massive weakness, and we should be able to exploit it brilliantly with the Mane and Origi, their pace and strength and shooting ability, which is more Origi than Mane. But I want to kind of go back to the diamond question,
yeah, sure,
topic thing. I kind of think it's a decent idea, and I think I'm not a massive tactical genius I'm not as much of a tactical genius as Arjun is, evidently, but I think it could be quite a nice little experiment for us to try, especially in this period when we've not got Coutinho. And I think up top, we may end up missing Origi if we went for Firmino and Mane as like a two false nine kind of things, with Lallana behind them. But I also think Lallana may play deeper. I think we could play a similar formation and have like Henderson in the DM role, and then Emre Can and Lallana, and then ahead of them we could have like Mane, and then the two up top could be Firmino and Origi.
I'd say Firmino at the 10 and Mane and Origi.
That's a decent idea too. Yeah, both of those could work quite well, and I think Firmino, he's great at coming back and dropping deep to get the ball and things like that, and so him at the 10 role could be quite, what's the opposite of detrimental?
Beneficial.
Him at the 10 role could be beneficial to our whole attack, because we'd have the two men forward anyway, and so he'd just be dropping in and being able to distribute the ball forward, and we could launch some nice little attacks. So I think it would be a nice idea, but I'm not sure if Klopp's going to be looking at it just yet, because it's a game that we need to win to bounce back from that Bournemouth game, and I don't think it's time for experiments just yet.
That's a fair point as well. We definitely do need to make sure that we are ensuring a victory here and not letting the fans get out of hand with calling for people's heads. But I do agree, though. I think the diamond formation could make us so much more compact, and I think that could be so helpful to our play style, particularly with the quick passes that we usually put together. I think that would just further increase Jordan Henderson's pass tally of 1,217 passes so far this season, which is insane. There's only one other player that's got over 1,000 passes, and that's Fernandinho, who's got 1,003, which is 214 passes less than the Liverpool captain, which is absolutely ridiculous. I'd also like to say about Sadio Mane starting up front with Roberto Firmino or Divock Origi, doesn't really matter. Particularly in the first half, I think it would be especially in the first half, particularly when Mane's got his fresh legs and he's got all of his pace to get past the defender. This is why I say that Mane would be even better, say, as a half-time substitute, that he could come on for someone and he would be so quick out of the blocks. Because he scored 5 of his 7 goals in the first half. He's so much better when he can use his explosive pace to beat a defender and get in behind enemy lines. I'm going to move on again. Well, I say move on. I'm going to move back, really, because we're going to go back in and talk about our midfield, particularly the midfield three of Henderson, Chan, probably Wijnaldum, possibly Lallana. Lallana coming back, played best part of half an hour against Bournemouth. Didn't look himself, though, did he, Ross?
I don't know. I kind of had a really bad stream. I think I mentioned that in our Red review on Sunday. But, yeah, I think he should be starting. Like, we've seen so many times this season, we've mentioned it so many times this season, that we've been missing him in a lot of games. And, like, the United game, that was the key game for this explanation, because he came on, it was 0-0, but it was too little too late, and he did make a massive difference to the game, but he just couldn't get us that important goal. But I think now it's a good time for him to be coming in, because he did only play 30 minutes, like you said, against
Bournemouth.
That's the one. I'm forgetting the game. Wow, this is crazy. It's happening so quickly. But yeah, he played 30 minutes against Bournemouth, and I think he's ready to be playing in this game. Wijnaldum hasn't impressed me massively this season. He has been good, and he's been underrated a lot, but I still do rate Lallana miles ahead of him. And even with a little bit of, he's not been at his best, as you said. I think he should still be playing in that role ahead of Wijnaldum.
I saw an article, not by us, obviously, but by someone else, and it was the most overrated player on every Premier League team, and apparently Jorginho Wijnaldum is the most overrated player on the Liverpool team, which I'm not sure I agree with. Probably someone else, you know, someone by the name of either Coutinho or Mane.
Or Karius.
I don't think that he's overrated. I think that people have gone past that now, and they're more like, let's kill him already. But then, it's not his fault that he's shit. It's not Mignolet's fault that Mignolet's shit. It wasn't Pepe Reina's fault that Pepe Reina was shit in his final season with us. It's all John Akterberg's fault. Hashtag Akterberg out. Thank you. And I actually use that on Twitter. If you're still listening, use that on Twitter. At the Anfield Talk. Hashtag Akterberg out. Okay, because the amount of problems that this goalkeeper coach causes, we've talked about it so many times on the podcast. He played for Tranmere Rovers, and now he's come to goalkeeper coach at Liverpool. He joined in 2009, and he's been utter shite since. Ross has the opinion that Alex Manninger is here to become our new goalkeeper coach at the end of the season when he retires. I agree. There's not much more I can say about the goalkeeper situation there. Arjun, final question on the West Ham game for you. Where do you see Liverpool's goals coming from? Who and where?
Divock Origi, or rather, Big Cock Origi. Yeah, so he's been in hot form. And I think it's a little strange because I think Divock's lack of experience lets him down. To give you an example, last week against Bournemouth, the third goal, if I'm not mistaken. The third goal was kind of his fault because he went up against Jack Wilshere and he just let Wilshere win the header, which should never happen in a million years. So I just think that little bit of inexperience lets him down, but that's only going to come with game time, and he's going to get game time because Sturridge is out, Ings is out, Coutinho's out. So Pickcock definitely looking for some erections. And then I also look to Firmino to do something because I think for the first time since Jurgen Klopp has come in, Firmino has not contributed a goal or an assist in three consecutive games. That's a very rare occurrence for Firmino. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it's the first time it happened. Maybe he's come on as a sub and it hasn't worked. But every time he started, he's at least got a goal or an assist once every three games. So he should get at least one of them. And if we do switch to a diamond, I see Mane exploiting their centre-backs. Like, proper exploiting their centre-backs with his big cock.
When I asked you that question, I didn't envisage where that was going to go. I'm not sure I'm the same person that I was before. You changed me.
Have you been exploited too?
I've been exploited by Divock's big cock.
Oh god, okay.
Wow. You know? So the podcast has just taken a turn for the worse.
A massive turn.
The atmosphere has just changed.
The sex talk podcast.
Arjun, what's with the sex talk, man? Why?
Yeah, it's pretty much every podcast we have, Arjun, come on.
I know, right? You have to take it to a dark place every week. Right. I think we're going to leave.
Okay, never mind.
What was that?
I was going to say, was that a pun on Divock? Never mind. You said dark place and Divock. So.
dear.
Arjun, yes, that was 100% intentional, okay? That's all you need to know. Alright, we're going to move on from the West Ham game for now. We'll come back to it later when we make our predictions. But I believe I'm going to need to coin a jingle or something, because Here is Ross's transfer corner.
Okay, right, so it took a while for us to get there, but we got there eventually. Firstly, I'm going to mention something we spoke about last week, and we went a lot more in-depth with this guy last week, but I don't think there's any point in having a full-on conversation about him. But, Brendan Rodgers has come out in the past couple of days, I think it was before the City game or something, but he's said that Moussa Dembele is not going to be going anywhere in January, although he has actually admitted that he should end up leaving in the next couple of weeks. Well, no, I don't mean the couple of weeks. I don't know why I said weeks. He should be leaving in the next... Next couple of seasons, he expects Dembele will be moving on to a bigger club, and he says that's what they expect as Celtic, because they've had the likes of Van Dijk coming in, Wanyama, and they've all moved on to bigger clubs. But, yeah, this isn't really a shock. Yeah, this isn't a shock to us, because it's exactly what we said last week. We said we weren't expecting him to be leaving, but he is eventually. Next up, though, is a player I just mentioned, Van Dijk. We've mentioned him quite a few times, but there's a rumour going around. I can't remember who it was. I think it was Matt Law or someone. Correct me if I'm wrong. But he said that we're no longer massively interested in signing Van Dijk, which I'm not a massive fan on. I think we should be going in for him, and I hope it's a smokescreen or something. But, Arjun, what do you think? Do you think we should carry on with signing him?
Look, the people whom we've been linked to, Jonathan Tah, I think, Virgil van Dijk, and more recently, Jose Font. So, I read Jose Font, unlike some other people, but the best option, I think, would be Van Dijk for the long term, because he's young, he's experienced in the Premier League, so he doesn't have to settle in like a Jonathan Tah would. He's young, so there's no question of a short-term solution like Jose Font. My concern is that we won't get any quality players, any key players in January. So we're going to have to look at secondary options like a Jose Font to just fill in for the 6 months and then bring in someone more talented, more long-term basis in the summer.
Yeah, I do agree. I guess it's unlikely that Southampton are going to be willing to sell one of their key defenders in January, especially because it's going to be quite a important period of the season if they're going to be challenging for Europa League spots again, or even going further and heading for the Champions League spots. But yeah, the next player is a player that I haven't really done too much research on, and so I'm going to be asking you guys about him. But Jeffrey Kondogbia is a player we've been linked with for a number of seasons, and we did try and sign him before he moved to Inter, I think. But he's a 23-year-old defensive midfielder, and that raises the question, do you think we actually need a defensive midfielder, Anthony?
I'm so confused at this transfer rumour. Honestly, because with all the things that's happened with Manu Dahoud recently and us coming out and saying that our need for him has diminished, then why has the need for Jeffrey Kondogbia arose? Because they're basically going to fill the same position in our squad. They'd probably both come off the bench and do a job in the midfield. Why the need for Jeffrey Kondogbia? He's 23, and I'm surprised that he's still 23, because I thought he was much older than that. Kondogbia obviously is playing at Inter Milan now as the defensive midfielder there. He's only got one assist this season and not scored either. It's not the greatest transfer rumor. I don't think that he's that great of a player, to be honest. Would I see him in a Liverpool shirt? Probably not. We did try to sign him when he was at Monaco, as you said. We offered 20 million and they wanted 25, and we stepped out at that point. But I think I'd like to pass it over to Arjun a bit at this time and offer the floor to him.
Yeah, so I've just done a bit of research on Kondogbia's previous season at Inter Milan. Not this season, the last season. And I've compared him to N'Golo Kanté from last season and Nemanja Matic in the previous season when Chelsea won the title, and Jordan Henderson this season. Kondogbia has fewer interceptions than any of those three. N'Golo Kanté obviously is higher than anyone else. Kondogbia has a better pass rate than any of these players. He has as many, he's won as many tackles as Nemanja Matic in Chelsea's title winning season. He's got fewer yellow cards than Nemanja Matic. He's committed fewer fouls than Henderson and Conte. Fewest defensive errors amongst all these guys. And second highest in total duels won, the highest being Nemanja Matic. So I think this could be a really good signing. I know that's the Italian league and this is the Premier League. This could be a really shrewd signing if we can get him for around 20, 25 million. He's a young guy. Like Anthony said, he's only 20, 23, 24 years old. He'll be 24 next season. So this could be a long-term option. All of our players are around the same age. And we do need a central midfielder. I don't like to see Lallana playing in central midfield. It shouldn't... I mean, even if he does play, there should be a certain amount of depth. Our immediate option as far as depth goes is Lucas Leiva, and that I love Lucas, but no, just not good enough for a title winning team. So I could see Kondogbia coming in instead of Dahoud, definitely not, but as a second option, really not going to complain about it.
I agree. I agree but disagree, because You say that he would be a really shrewd signing, but I'm not too sure as to whether that is the case. But obviously, Kondogbia is 23, still time for him to grow into a player, but I wouldn't take him over Dahoud any day. I think Dahoud's he could be a much better player right now, and he's still only 20, so he's still got 3 years to reach the level that Kondogbia is now. And I'm not sure that we should be paying 20, 25 million for somebody who's just going to sit on the bench and play 10 minutes at the end of the game. Of a game each week, because as we know, Klopp doesn't really like to make substitutions. Arjun, Kondogbia is 23. How old's Kevin Stewart again?
20 fucking three.
They're the same age.
No, we need someone to be fourth choice DM for their entire career. So
that's a good idea.
Exactly. I'd actually be sad if we let Kevin Stewart go, though, because there is too much to be laughed at here on the podcast with Kevin Stewart.
Yeah, and we won't have a scapegoat.
Exactly.
Have you not heard our new scapegoat is John Achterbury?
Oh, no, that's for the first team. I'm talking about the under-23s.
That is absolutely great. And I'm sure everybody everywhere will completely agree with you, apart from
fully
one or two. Ross, I believe we've taken the spotlight away from you. Do you want it back?
Yeah, I'm going to take it right back. And the next player I'm going to mention, he's a very young player. He plays on the right wing. He's American, and he plays for Klopp's old club. It's Christian Pulisic. The 18-year-old has been linked with us for quite a while now, but the rumours have been picking up recently, and the main reason for this is apparently FSG are keen to bring in the 18-year-old, mainly due to his nationality, because obviously FSG, they're an American company, and it would be massive for their, I don't know, it would be massive for something, it's a word that I can't remember.
Publicity.
That's the one, publicity. If Pulisic joins the club, because they'd have someone from their own country, and it would help Americans have some reason to support Liverpool more than they do now. I don't know. But Dortmund as well, another thing that's making this rumour come to light again is they're apparently willing to sell him to Jurgen Klopp. No, they're not willing to sell him, but they're more like they prefer to sell to Jurgen Klopp over any other manager in the world, and that's obviously due to the way he nurtures young talent, and he'd help take Pulisic to the next level. So, and that's a major advantage to us against Arsenal and Spurs, who are apparently also interested in the young winger. But Arjun, do you think he's the winger that we should be looking to sign?
I don't see why not. He's young. He's really good. He's proved himself in the Champions League and in the Bundesliga. And we all know that players who are successful in the Bundesliga can translate into success in the Premier League. So I wouldn't mind signing Pulisic at all.
Yeah, I think it would be a nice little signing. He's got a lot of potential, and I haven't seen too much of him. But from what I have seen, he seems like the kind of player that could really work well in a Jurgen Klopp system, and it could be massive for the future. Do you have anything?
Yeah, I think Pulisic would be a great signing. He can play on either wing, really, the 18-year-old American, and he has already got 2 goals and 4 assists in the Bundesliga this season. In only 2 starts for Dortmund and 4 substitute appearances, so he's not playing that much, but he is playing enough games to show what he can do. 2 goals and 4 assists, as I mentioned, isn't too shabby for a league that is probably the second most competitive league in Europe. I wouldn't say it's the best for quality, but it's definitely very, very competitive, especially between the top 8 spots, when you've got teams like Leverkusen, Schalke, Dortmund themselves, you've got Wolfsburg all in the mix there, with all similar levels of quality in their teams. Pulisic is a debatable player to sign this young, because obviously we want to see where he can go, but I think that he's already shown how much potential that he has got. And I know Michael Zorc, the executive director, I think he is, of Dortmund, he came out and said that we're not going to sell him in January. And then Liverpool came back and said, that doesn't matter, we don't care, we're going to try and sign him anyway. I think that shows the statement of intent and how badly Liverpool want to sign him. And yes, he is American, and yes, FSG would want to sign him, but I don't think that's really going to matter, because he's got that talent anyway. I know it is a favourable thing, but I think that Pulisic's talent is too good to miss out, even if he is being brought in just because he's American. Arjun, why would Liverpool sign Pulisic?
Yeah, just to add on to your point about him not playing too much. You look at Dortmund's squad right now. Ousmane Dembele, Emre Moore, Mario Götze, Marco Reus, Aubameyang, Adrian Ramos, Andre Schürrle, Shinji Kagawa, Gonzalo Castro.
Amazing depth.
Yeah, that's the 9 guys playing the same exact position that Pulisic does. That's a wide player or a winger. So
I wouldn't put Gonzalo Castro in that category.
He comes in, he moves out. They play like a 4-1-4-1. It's the same reason I put Aubameyang in, because he also moves in and out a bit. So these are all guys who play in the same exact position, and Pulisic isn't getting the time he needs to develop as a player. And Klopp brought him in at Dortmund, and I think he feels like he owes Klopp a lot. So he would love to play for Klopp, and that's why I think Dortmund will sell him, and why we should buy him, because massive potential.
Yeah, I do agree. And I think that Klopp being the player that brought him into Dortmund is going to be massively important. I say massively too often, but Klopp being the one that brought him into Dortmund is going to make him way more favourable to a move to Liverpool rather than other English clubs or other European clubs. So I do agree with you completely there, Arjun. Right, the last thing on my list of our transfer / contract rumours of the week, I've got quite an interesting one. Roberto Firmino there's been a Football Leagues thing with all the contracts, and we have found out that Bobby has got a release clause of $82 million in his contract. This also is a release clause that can't be
triggered.
What a word. Can't be triggered by Arsenal. So it's an interesting little thing. I don't know why they'd be doing that. What do you think, Arjun?
Like you said, I have no idea. Arsenal aren't going to pay $82 million even in their wildest dreams. So I think we should have protected him from the likes of Chelsea and City before we actually protect him from the likes of Arsenal. That's just my opinion. And it's fine that there's a release clause. I just think we should be a little bit smarter. Like, for example, Danny Levy at Tottenham. He doesn't insert release clauses into his players' contracts because he knows he can get whatever exorbitant prices, $100 million for Gareth Bale or whatever. So I think we need to be a little smarter, but $82 million is a hell of a lot anyway.
82.3 million buyout clause, which was I think it was 98 million euros, which is absolutely insane. It just goes to show that Arsenal really can stick their 40 million and £1 up their ass. Because I think that's what all this is about, is that grudge from that one time that they offered £1 over Luis Suarez's buyout clause. And obviously they beat us to the signature of Sanchez, which obviously we didn't realise how much of a miss that would be. It is a very strange one, and I think it was in a French newspaper that this came out, and along with many other contract leaks, that one was that Hugo Lloris gets a £4,000 bonus every time Tottenham lose, which I find odd.
Wait, what?
yeah, that's genuinely true.
That's interesting, because he's the one that conceded the goals.
Exactly. It just goes to show, doesn't it? Talking about Tottenham, Tottenham played Manchester United this week in probably the biggest game of the weekend. And we're just going to give our opinion on all of the games. And we're also going to introduce something very, very interesting as well, just before we round up the podcast with a bit of fantasy football talk. 10 games this weekend, as I mentioned at the start of the podcast. 6 on Saturday, rounding up with Leicester Man City as the 5:30 kickoff. And 4 on Sunday, starting with Chelsea West Brom and ending with our games versus West Ham United. I'm going to go to both of you for each game. For a couple of games, I'm just going to ask you for one-word answers. Arjun first, Watford versus Everton. Can Watford stop Everton? One word.
Yes.
Thank you. Ross, one word also. Watford-Everton. Are Everton going to be able to score enough goals to beat Watford?
No.
Okay. Arjun, Ross, you've both made your predictions. I've taken those in for what I'm going to use later on. Ross, you've predicted that Everton are going to beat Watford 2-0. And Arjun, you've said it's going to be 2-1 to Watford. Could you give me a reason why?
Because I hate the blue shite.
That is a fair enough reason, you know?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Ross, why'd you say 2-0 to the blue shite, though?
Well, because they're all right, really, aren't they? At the moment.
No, they're not.
Liverpool fan, Ronald Koeman in charge. Gonna smash it.
Ross, you do realise you've just contradicted yourself, though, Ross. Said that Everton can't score enough goals to get past Watford, and then you've predicted them to win 2-0.
See, I actually thought you asked me the other way around, so should have listened a bit better there.
Well, yeah, open your ears. Simple enough question, right? Second placed Arsenal are at home to Stoke this weekend. Arjun, you said 2-0 to Arsenal. Ross, you went a bit more out there and said 4-2 to Arsenal, which is a bit out there. And I said 3-1 to Arsenal. Ross, why the outlandish scoreline?
I don't know, I just thought that there needed to be an interesting one this weekend. I put a couple of interesting ones this weekend, but Arsenal, they've shown they can score goals. They scored 5 last week against West Ham, and they also conceded to West Ham, so it's going to be exactly the same this week, but just 2 goals different. So not exactly the same at all.
Arjun, you're a little less confident in Arsenal's ability.
It's not so much Arsenal's ability as Stoke's inability. I just don't think Stoke are going to score against Arsenal. And Arsenal seem like a side that's satisfied with 2-0s and 3-0s as opposed to 6-1s and 7-2s or whatever.
That's fair enough. The two teams that we haven't played so far this season go head-to-head in Burnley and Bournemouth. They play at Turf Moor. I'm just going to ask for a one-word answer again. Arjun, how do you think this game will go?
1-1.
Ross?
That's 2 words, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Draw.
That's better. Ross, this is the same question. Burnley, Bournemouth.
Draw,
that sounds about right. Burnley, Arjun, as he said, 1-1. Ross, you've actually predicted a 0-0, and I've said Bournemouth are going to win 1-0 on their travels up to Turf Moor. And there's quite a few nonchalant, boring games this weekend. Hull, Crystal Palace, Swansea, Sunderland. Southampton, Middlesbrough, Man United, Spurs, and you've also got the more exciting games that like Leicester, Man City, Chelsea, West Brom, and us against West Ham. Arjun, can I have your predictions for the Hull, Crystal Palace, Swansea, Sunderland, and the Southampton, Middlesbrough game?
I think Hull and Crystal Palace, it's going to be a draw. Sunderland are going to thrash Swansea, and Southampton's going to win.
Why do you say Sunderland are going to thrash Swansea?
Because Swansea's defence is terrible. It's atrocious. It's not even... Atrocious is an understatement. I don't even know where to start. I really like them, but they've just completely lost it this season.
I don't even think that they've completely lost it this season. They've completely lost it since Bob Bradley's been in charge. Ross, the same three games. What are your predictions for those three?
I genuinely can't remember what I predicted earlier, and so can you remind me?
You have said Swansea 1, Sunderland 1,
yep.
Hull 0, Crystal Palace 3. You've also said Southampton 2, Middlesbrough 1.
Yeah, I mean, the Sunderland-Swansea game, I mean, I don't rate Bob Bradley... I don't rate Bob Bradley at all, and so I don't see them having an incredible game, but they might get a cheeky little goal. And Sunderland, they're coming back into form a little bit, but obviously we beat them the other week, and so, you know, they might have an okay game, but I don't see them getting more than 1 point. And then the other games, I'm not going to go into.
That's okay. Also happening this week, everybody has predicted wins for Chelsea. Nobody even gave West Brom a goal in their predictions. People divided on the Man United Spurs game. Ross, you gave Man United 3 goals to Spurs' 2. I'll talk a bit more about the averages later. And us against West Ham, everybody predicting a Liverpool win. Arjun, you said 3-1 to Liverpool. I said 2-1 to Liverpool, and Ross, you said 4-0 to Liverpool. Why four?
I just don't rate West Ham, as I've mentioned a lot of times before, and I think we need to bounce back, and no better way to bounce back than winning 4-0.
That is a very true statement.
More importantly, why nil?
Because I think Karius is going to prove his doubters wrong.
Arjun, I think you had a pretty similar... Thought line to your prediction, even if we did concede a goal.
Yeah, I think we're always liable to concede a goal. It's just going to happen. But I think Karius will do well. I think he'll make a couple of really crucial saves that will get us the 3 points.
He has already showed that he can make saves himself. There was a one-on-one situation in the game against the red and black team that we haven't played yet. We are introducing something this week called the Anfield Talk Predicts. Us three, as the podcast team, are going to go head-to-head with the Anfield Talk writers in our... I'm going to call it a predictor league. I've taken predictions from as many writers as possible and put them into an average scoreline for each game for this weekend, and next week we'll compare how we did. The Anfield Talk writers together, they've predicted Watford to lose to Everton 2-1, Arsenal to beat Stoke 3-1, Burnley to draw 1-1 with Bournemouth, Hull to lose to Crystal Palace at home 1-0, Swansea to lose to Sunderland 2-0, Man City to beat Leicester 3-1, Chelsea to beat West Brom 3-0, Man United and Tottenham to draw 1-1 at Old Trafford, Southampton to get the better of Borough at St Mary's 2-1, and Liverpool to beat West Ham with a comfortable scoreline of 3-0. We'll revisit that next week when we get the chance, and we're just going to finish off with a little chat about fantasy football. Ross, you're the top dog of the Anfield Talk Fantasy Football, not in our followers' fantasy football, though I think you're eighth in that. How are you doing it? How are you getting so high at the minute?
What I do is I transfer in a player, right? And I just know they're going to do well, and my positive vibes move over to them, and they just know they've got to score goals. But really, no, I've just been lucky, really. I don't have a clue what I'm doing.
If you could
Thank
suggest...
Thank God, because that was just such a whole lot of bullshit there. That just
if you could bring in one player this week, who would it be?
Ah, that's a good question. I need to get rid of Aguero, so I'm going to think of a striker that I'm going to bring in. It's going to be Divock Origi.
Can I give you a suggestion?
What's your suggestion?
Kelechi Iheanacho.
Oh, yeah, because Aguero is out.
24.4% conversion rate, and he scored over 10 goals last season.
That's an interesting suggestion. I may look into that, but I don't know yet. But Sanchez.
Sanchez is a good option as well. Maybe
he's my main dog.
Maybe you could swap out a midfielder and play Iheanacho and get a more expensive midfielder. You never know. Arjun, you're not doing too well, are you, in the Fantasy Football League? Neither am I, to be fair, because I had a meltdown on match week 4 and made 11 substitutions, and that just goes to show how bad that can turn out. Arjun, how's your fantasy team going?
Terrible. I had this amazing week where I was second in the Writers League, and then I don't know what happened. I've got like 22, 32, and 25 points in consecutive weeks. So I'm hoping me dropping Aguero can do something really good for my team, because he's the one who's been costing me points. I've been making him captain and he's getting minus points, for God's sake. So yeah, I'm hoping Costa can do something, because Chelsea's next 5-6 games are really favorable. They play West Brom, Sunderland, Crystal Palace, Stoke City. So I think Costa can get goals in every game.
Costa's doubtful for the weekend, though.
If that's the case, then I would bring in, for this week only, Jermaine Defoe, because they're playing Swansea and Swansea suck.
I've got him on the team.
So have I. Ross, you captained Jermaine Defoe last week, didn't you?
I did indeed. And you captained Aguero.
I know. That was a big mistake. I ended up with 37 points last weekend, and hopefully I'm going to do much better this weekend. I brought in Sanchez, I have Hazard in my midfield, and I've got Callum Wilson and Jermaine Defoe up top, so hopefully that'll be a good start for me. Anyway, I think that's about it. We've just about covered everything to do with the West Ham game, the Premier League games this weekend, the new Tap Predictor League. We hope that you've enjoyed our first Premier League review show, and we hope you'll join us after the West Ham game for our Premier League Red review, where we see what Liverpool were up to on the weekend and basically how shit we were. So thank you very much for listening, and we will see you again at the end of the week.
Goodbye.
And it makes a fiery ring, bound by wild desire. I fell into a ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, burns, burns. The ring of fire, the ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. The taste of love is sweet when hearts like ours meet. I fell for you like a child. But the fire went wild. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire, the ring of fire.